Real talk. Sometimes life throws decisions our way that feel impossible to navigate. That's where a little guidance can make all the difference. At Psychic Source, our trusted psychics go beyond basic predictions. They provide real insight, helping you understand your situation, see your options clearly, and take confident next steps. Your reading is always private and judgment-free, so whether you're facing a crossroads in love, career, or life's bigger questions, you'll get honest, compassionate advice in a safe space. And the best part? Our psychics are available 24/7 by phone, chat, or video, whenever you need them. Plus, we stand by our readings. If you're not satisfied, it's free. Because when you have greater wisdom, you can create a better outcome. Ready to take control of your future? Get a reading for just 83 cents per minute, plus 3 minutes free. Visit PsychicSource.com and use promo code HELLO to get started. Psychic Source. Insight when you need it most.
Story 1. I live in northern Georgia, near Ellijay, just far enough from town that the nights are too quiet and the woods go too deep. I've always been into reptiles, turtles especially, and I monitor a few common snapping turtles that hibernate in an old overgrown creek bed behind the ridgeline. I hike out to check on them during the colder months, usually alone. It's remote enough out there that you don't really expect to run into anyone, which is how I like it, or used to. This happened in mid-January last year. I remember because it was just after that cold snap where everything froze solid. I had gone out late in the afternoon around 3:30. I figured I'd have enough time to check the last turtle site and get back before the sun dipped too low. I parked at the edge of the forest trail and hiked in about 2.5 miles, boots crunching through leftover frost and dead leaves. The woods were quiet, too quiet now that I think about it. I crouched down at the final turtle site, just a shallow depression under a tangle of roots near the dry part of the creek. I was brushing aside a layer of leaves, checking the temperature logger I'd buried nearby, when I felt this weird vibration in the ground. Subtle, like a deep bass note you can't quite hear, but you feel it in your chest. I froze. Then, just like someone flipped a switch, every sound in the woods shut off. Birds gone. Wind. Dead still. Even the rustle of squirrels or the occasional snap of twigs under a deer's hooves. Nothing. I stood up slowly, glancing around. My skin crawled with the feeling that something was watching me. Not in a metaphorical sense, like actual eyes were on me. I scanned the trees but didn't see anything at first. I tightened my grip on my walking stick and reached back to slide my knife from the sheath on my hip. I started heading back the way I came. Not in a panic, just moving steady. About 30 or 40 yards in, I heard movement behind me. Deliberate footsteps, crunching softly in the dead leaves. Not fast, not heavy, but pacing me. I stopped. The sound stopped. I took two steps. It took two steps. I didn't turn around. I just kept walking. A little faster now, heart starting to hammer in my ears. Then from behind me, I heard breathing. Not like panting, not like a dog or a deer. Deep, raspy, wet. I turned then, fast, stick up, knife out. That's when I saw it. It looked like a dog at first. A massive, emaciated-looking wild dog. But something was wrong with it. The limbs were too long, the back legs looked bent the wrong way, and the skin, if that's what it was stretched tight and patchy, like mange, but worse. I could see bone and tendon. Its eyes weren't right. No light in them. Just black. It didn't growl. It didn't snarl. It just stared. Tongue hanging out slightly, as if it was trying to imitate a dog, but didn't quite know how. "Back off!" I shouted, trying to make myself sound bigger, meaner than I felt. I raised my stick. The thing tilted its head, slow and unnatural, like it was confused. I started backing up, never taking my eyes off it. It didn't move, just watched me, breathing that disgusting wet breath that sounded like it was bubbling up through something thick. I got maybe 100 feet before it started walking again, following me. Not running, just walking, like it had all the time in the world. And that's what scared me more than anything. It wasn't in a rush. It knew it didn't have to be. I broke into a jog, eyes darting around for anything I could use, or anywhere I could run that it couldn't follow. But it kept pace, unblinking, walking slowly behind me through the trees. It didn't make any sound except the occasional crunch of leaves. When I got within view of my truck, finally I ran. I hit the unlock button on my keys and that tiny chirp echoed like a gunshot in the silence. That's when the thing ran. I heard it tearing through the brush behind me, claws or hooves or something, scraping and thudding across the frozen ground. I didn't look back. I just bolted for the door, yanked it open, and dove in. As I slammed the door and hit the lock, I looked up, and it was there. Not at the door, not at the front. It was on top of the truck. I don't know how it got up there, or when. I didn't hear a single sound of it climbing, jumping, nothing. It was just suddenly crouched on the roof of my truck, claws digging into the metal. I could feel its weight shifting the whole vehicle slightly. Its head hung down over the edge of the windshield, and I swear to God, it smiled. Its jaw cracked open wider than it should have been able to, showing rows of teeth, too many teeth. And then it made a sound I'll never forget. It copied me. That same shout I'd made earlier, "Back off," came out of its mouth, but warped, wrong. Like it was trying to speak, but had never used human vocal cords before. It was slow and broken and slurred, like a recording played through old tape. It laughed after, a garbled, glitchy laugh. I slammed the truck into reverse and floored it. The thing slid off the roof and hit the ground, but when I checked the rearview mirror, it wasn't lying there. It was standing in the road directly behind me, head cocked again, watching me speed away. I drove straight home, parked my truck in the garage, and didn't sleep that night. I didn't tell anyone for weeks. When I finally went back out there a month later, everything was gone. No tracks, no damage on the roof, not even the logger I'd buried. But I swear to you, it happened. I don't go that far into the woods anymore. I don't check on the turtles. Story 2. I live in upstate New York, just outside the Catskills. I'm 29, work in HVAC, and spend most of my weekends outdoors. Fishing, camping, whatever gets me away from people and concrete. This happened last summer. I haven't talked about it much, mostly because when I try to, I feel stupid. But I wasn't imagining it. I know what I felt, I know what I heard, and I'll never go back there. It was a Saturday morning, late July, humid as hell. I had this idea to check on a few turtle nesting spots I'd marked earlier in the spring. There's this little peninsula that juts into Cranberry Lake, not far from Wanakana. It's not a place people usually go. You'd have to hike about 3 miles in, and even then you'd need to paddle across a narrow stretch of water to get to the actual spot. There are old cabins scattered around the shore, most of them rotting into the trees, abandoned for decades. I drove out there early, parked near the ranger station, and hiked in with my inflatable paddleboard in a backpack. The whole walk, I didn't see a soul. No tire marks, no boot prints, just deer trails and the occasional bird call. Perfect. By the time I inflated the board and got onto the water, it was maybe 8:30. The lake was still, fog hanging low over the surface like a sheet. It was quiet. Quiet in that unnatural way, like even the bugs didn't want to make noise. I remember that clearly. Not even crickets. Just silence. I paddled slow, hugging the tree-lined edge of the water. The cabins were even worse up close. Windows shattered, roofs caved in, moss growing in thick patches up the walls. There was one with a dock, half sunken and crooked, just barely sticking out above the surface. I passed it without thinking much of it, kept paddling until I reached what I thought was the inlet I was looking for. But I was wrong. I didn't realize it at first. Everything looked familiar, but the angles were off. It was smaller, tighter, more reeds than I remembered. I figured the water level had changed or the vegetation had shifted since spring, so I went on. After about 10 minutes of paddling into the cove, I noticed something weird. There were no turtles. No movement. The logs that had been basking spots before were covered in slime, undisturbed. And still, no noise. That's when I started to feel it. That weird sensation like someone's watching you, even when you know no one's around. I scanned the shore. Nothing. No deer, no raccoons, no birds, no bugs, not even a breeze. I stopped paddling. Just floated for a bit. tried to pull out my phone to check my GPS, but of course, no service. I sat down cross-legged on the board and just tried to focus, figure out where I was. I could hear my heartbeat in my ears. That's how quiet it was. Then something bumped the board. Not a wave. Not a fish. Something heavy hit the bottom, dead center. It jolted me, made the whole board rock. I froze, tried to convince myself it was a snapping turtle or a submerged log. But then it happened again, harder, like something shoved the board from beneath. I called out, just a reflex. Hello? My voice sounded wrong, flat, swallowed by the fog, no echo. I looked down into the water, but it was dark, too dark to see anything, just thick, black, green, and still. I started paddling back, fast, not full panic yet, but close. I kept looking behind me like something was going to burst out of the water, and then I heard it. Breathing, slow, labored breathing, like someone with a collapsed lung was right behind me. I whipped around, nothing, just fog and water. But the breathing didn't stop. It circled me, moved around the board like someone was walking in a slow circle, just under the surface. I didn't think. I dropped to my knees and started paddling like a maniac, straight for the dock I'd passed earlier. It felt like miles and the breathing didn't fade. It followed me, stayed with me, closer and closer. Then I heard wood creak right beside me. I turned my head and saw the old dock. Somehow, I'd made it back. I pulled up alongside it, grabbed one of the slimy posts, and started climbing out. Just as I got one foot onto the boards, the paddleboard was yanked. Not pulled by the current, jerked. I watched it get dragged backward, away from the dock, fast, and then gone. It just disappeared under the water. No splash, no swirl. It was just there 1 second and gone the next. I scrambled onto the dock, crawled on all fours like an animal, shaking so bad I couldn't stand. The wood was soaked and sagging, and I was terrified it was going to give way. But I didn't care. I just wanted to get away from the edge. And then I heard it again, the breathing, except now it was on the dock, right behind me. I didn't turn around. I couldn't. I just got to my feet somehow and sprinted into the woods. Left everything behind, my bag, my shoes, everything. I ran barefoot for miles, branches tore my skin, and I didn't care. I just ran until I hit the road. I flagged down a car, a retired couple heading to a trailhead, and they drove me straight to the ranger station. I didn't tell them what happened. I said I fell in the lake and lost my board. They offered to help me look for it, but I told them no. I said I was done, and I meant it. I didn't go back. Not for my stuff, not for the turtles, not even for the board, which cost me almost $700. Whatever was in that lake, whatever was beneath me, I'm not going back. You can write it off as panic or confusion or even hallucination if you want, but I wasn't high, I wasn't drunk, I wasn't sleep deprived. I was alone in broad daylight and something touched that board. Something pulled it under. Something breathed. I know what I felt. And I'll never set foot near Cranberry Lake again. Story 3. I live in Eugene, Oregon, trail country. If you're into hiking, you know this area is packed with forest routes that go from scenic and peaceful to downright creepy once the sun drops. This happened when I was 15. I'd always been that kid who thought he wasn't scared of anything. I grew up around woods, spent entire summers running trails, fishing, camping. But that night changed the way I see the forest. It started because my friend Will dared me and our other buddy Nate to do a night hike on one of our usual running routes, Ridgeline Trail. We knew it like the backs of our hands. Nothing complicated, no wild animals to worry about, and technically it wasn't even that deep into the woods. We figured we'd start around 9:30 p.m., loop around for about an hour, and be back home by 11. No big deal. We parked near the trailhead. It was still just barely light out. That blue-gray color the sky gets before full dark. No one else around. Will had one of those little LED headlamps, Nate had a flashlight on his phone, and I didn't bring anything because I figured the moon would do the job. That was my first mistake. The second was thinking we were alone. 10 minutes in, we were messing around, laughing, being loud on purpose because it was spooky and we were trying to act like it wasn't. The trail cuts along a ridge with forest on both sides and occasional breakouts where you can see the valley below. It's usually quiet out there. That night, it felt wrong. Not loud, not quiet, just off. No wind, no bugs, just the sound of our footsteps and a lot of space between trees that suddenly felt way too wide. We got to a part of the trail where the trees thin out on the left, and the drop to the right steepens down into this thick cluster of trees. That's when Will just froze mid-step. He looked back at us and whispered, "Did you hear that?" Me and Nate stopped and listened. At first, nothing. Then about 5 seconds later, something mimicked the sound of footsteps behind us. I'm not saying it sounded like footsteps. I'm saying it was footsteps. Gravel crunching, slow and careful, like someone didn't want to be noticed. They stopped when we stopped. Nate whipped around with his phone light and scanned the trail behind us. Empty. "Probably an animal," he muttered, already walking again. Will didn't move. I could see his breath in the air, even though it wasn't cold enough for that. "You guys," he said, "I swear to God it was pacing us." We were all on edge now. Started walking again, but faster, not talking this time. I kept looking back, and I didn't see anything. But every time we stopped, we'd hear the steps. Always stopping just after we did. Like whatever it was didn't expect us to catch on. About 2 more minutes of that, and I heard it again. Running. Like something broke into a full sprint behind us. Heavy. Aggressive. I turned just in time to see this guy, or something that looked like a guy, bolt off the trail into the woods. Except he didn't look right. His legs moved too fast. His back was twisted weird, hunched like he was half crawling and half running. I couldn't even make out a face. Just long limbs, pale clothes, and this jittery, jerky movement that didn't look real. He never looked at us. Just dashed into the trees and vanished. Nate screamed. I'm not even ashamed to say I did too. Will dropped his headlamp when he turned to run. We ran, like instinct took over, and we weren't even thinking. That trail was maybe a mile and a half back to the car, but I swear it felt like 10. I don't think we said a single word until we were inside the car, locking the doors and trying to catch our breath. Will kept saying, "That was a person, right? That was just a person." But none of us answered because I think we all knew it wasn't. People don't move like that. People don't wait in silence, pacing your footsteps, matching your stops. And most people don't vanish into a forest without a sound. We didn't tell anyone, not for months. Nate finally brought it up again, said he went back to the trail in the daylight, tried to find footprints or something. Said the only thing he found was an old torn-up hoodie caught in a tree about 30 feet off the trail where that thing ran. Looked like it had been out there for years. I haven't been back to Ridgeline since, day or night. We all kind of dropped night hiking after that. It's not a joke anymore. I don't even like running trails alone in the daylight these days. That one night peeled something back, showed me a version of the woods I didn't know was there. And the worst part? I never saw a face. Just a blur of limbs and motion, and a sound I'll never forget. Gravel crunching, right behind me, like it wanted me to turn around, like it wanted to be seen. Story 4. I live just outside Flagstaff, Arizona. Quiet neighborhood, lots of pine, nothing unusual. That summer, my dad had this idea to get my little brother ready for his first solo Boy Scout camping trip. He was 9, I was 12. Dad thought a weekend family trip would ease him into it, just the three of us. We drove about 2 hours north to a semi-remote campground near Kaibab Forest. No cell service, pit toilets, classic middle-of-nowhere setup. First night was fine. We made hot dogs, told dumb jokes, passed out early, normal stuff. Second night, that's what this is about. It started with me waking up. I didn't hear anything at first. I just woke up, like someone had tapped me on the shoulder. I opened my eyes and listened. Dad was snoring softly. My brother was curled up next to me, breathing steady. Then I heard it. Crunch, crunch, crunch. Heavy steps, right outside the tent. At first I thought it might be a deer or maybe a bear, but it was walking on 2 feet. The steps were too spaced out. Too deliberate. You can tell the difference. I froze. I didn't even breathe. Who the hell hikes around campsites at 1 a.m.? The steps circled the tent. Slow. One loop. then another, then another. I couldn't tell how many times. It just kept going, around and around. Never fast, never slow, just steady. I remember looking at the ceiling of the tent, barely visible in the moonlight, and counting in my head. 30 seconds between each pass. That's how I knew it was circling. Same rhythm every time. I wanted to wake up Dad, but I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. I just lay there, eyes wide, heart pounding so hard I thought it would wake my brother. Eventually, the footsteps stopped. Dead silence, not even wind, not a single bug. I thought it was over. Then the zipper on the tent twitched, not opened, not pulled, just twitched, like something brushed it. I felt warm urine soak my sleeping bag. I didn't even care. I was sure whatever it was going to come in, but it didn't. The silence stretched for what felt like forever. Then I heard it again, those same steps, but this time, moving away, back toward the woods. Crunch, crunch, fading. I didn't sleep. I must have passed out, but it wasn't sleep. It was like my brain just gave up. Morning came. Sunlight made it feel like maybe I'd imagined it. My pants were dry, sort of. The sleeping bag still reeked of piss. My dad stirred and sat up, muttering about coffee. My brother was still snoring. Dad reached for the zipper, unzipped the tent. Then he stopped. He didn't move, didn't say anything for a solid 5 seconds. Then he just goes, "What the fu-?" I sat up and looked over his shoulder. There was a deer, a full-grown buck, laid out perfectly, like someone had placed it there gently. Legs tucked under, not a drop of blood on the body, but the head was gone, clean gone, like someone took it off with a guillotine. My dad started looking around, calling out, "Anyone out there? This some kind of joke?" Nobody answered. No tracks, no blood trail, no drag marks, just the headless body about 3 feet from the tent flap. We packed up fast, didn't even eat. Didn't even talk. My dad didn't say a word the entire ride home. Later, he called the park rangers. They chalked it up to poachers or predators. But predators don't place their kills like that, and poachers don't circle tents at 1 a.m. I never told my brother what I heard that night. He still went on that Boy Scout trip a few weeks later. I pretended to be fine. I pretended like it never happened. But I haven't camped since. Not once. And I never will. Story 5. I live in northern Idaho in a town called Sandpoint. It's small, tucked between mountains and dense forests. People come here for the lakes, hiking, and the kind of quiet you can't get in cities. I grew up around woods. My dad taught me to hunt before I was 10. So being alone in the forest was never something that scared me. Until one night, when I was 17, something happened that still messes with me. It was early October, just cold enough to keep most people out of the mountains. Me and my buddy Dylan decided to head up to one of the spots near Schweitzer Mountain, where my dad and I always set up blinds for deer season. Dylan had just gotten his license, and I had a beater SUV with four-wheel drive, so we loaded up some gear, a cooler, a couple of rifles for target shooting, and headed out after school. We didn't get up there until almost dark. There's a narrow logging road that snakes up through the trees, and if you don't know where to look, you'd never find the pull-off. I'd been there 100 times. We parked, set up camp about 30 feet from the fire pit my dad and I had built years ago, and cracked open some cold chili. Nothing fancy. Shot the .22 a few times into an old stump. Lit up the fire. Basic stuff. We stayed up talking, mostly joking around, half spooked by every snap of a twig just because it was pitch black out there and the trees pressed in tight. We had no cell service, but that wasn't unusual. No other vehicles had passed us. We were completely alone. Or so we thought. Around 11, we decided to crash. I remember spreading out the fire with a shovel like my dad taught me. Flatten it down, spread the embers, no flare-ups. It was dying low, just red coals and a few flickers. We zipped up the tent and passed out quick. At some point later, I think it was after midnight, I woke up. No reason, just that gut feeling that something's off. I sat up and noticed the tent was glowing, like orange. I thought maybe the fire had caught again, so I unzipped the flap quietly. Dylan stirred but didn't wake up. What I saw made my blood go cold. The fire was burning again. Not just smoldering, actually burning. Flames 2 feet high, crackling like someone had just stoked it. And sitting next to it, on one of the logs we'd used as a bench, was a woman. Long black hair, pale face, just sitting there, facing the fire. Her back was to me. I stared for what felt like forever, thinking maybe my eyes were playing tricks. But I saw her move. Her head turned slightly like she heard me. That's when I whispered, "Dylan. Dylan, wake up, man." He sat up groggy. "What?" "Someone's at the fire," I said. "I'm not kidding." He crawled up next to me and looked out through the flap. He froze. "What the hell?" he whispered. The woman didn't react, didn't move again, just sat there. I grabbed my flashlight and unzipped the tent the rest of the way, stepping out slow. I wasn't thinking clearly, just running on adrenaline. "Hey!" I called out. No response. She didn't even flinch. "You're on private land," I said louder. "You need to go." Still nothing. Dylan was behind me now, holding the .22 like it'd do something. I had a hunting knife on me but didn't draw it. I didn't want to escalate anything. I just wanted her gone. I stepped closer, maybe 5 feet from her. That's when she stood up. Her movement was stiff, unnatural. She didn't look at us, just turned her head slightly toward me, enough that I could see her eyes. They were wide open, too wide, and her mouth. It was open too, like she was gasping, but no sound came out. Her skin looked gray in the firelight, almost bluish. Then she turned, not walked, turned, and started moving down the ravine behind the fire pit. That slope leads to posted property with a barbed wire fence and no outlet. It's steep, and she just disappeared into it like she didn't care about falling. We didn't follow. We stood frozen until the fire started dying again. No sounds, no voices, nothing. We didn't sleep after that. We sat by the tent with our rifles, watching the tree line, jumping at every crack or rustle. At first light, we packed everything in record time and got the hell out. We told a forest ranger when we stopped for gas later that day, but he just shrugged and said, maybe it was someone squatting or high. But I know what I saw. That wasn't someone high. That wasn't even human. She never made a sound, and we never heard her arrive. No footsteps, no snapping branches, nothing. To this day, I've never camped at that spot again. I won't even go up that road. Story 6. I live in Pueblo, Colorado. After I got back from Iraq in 2007, I took whatever work I could get. Ended up as a powerline rigger for a company that handled EHV, extra high voltage, transmission lines. You know those giant steel towers you see cutting across open country? Yeah, those. This happened in late October of 2008. A nasty windstorm had ripped across southern Colorado, close to the New Mexico border. We got called out on emergency pay to fix a busted connection outside a stretch of dense forest and canyon territory near Trinidad. I said yes immediately, double pay. I packed up and met the crew at the yard before we headed out. It was already dark by the time we reached the site, close to 9 p.m. We parked off a narrow service road, surrounded by thick pine and brush. The tower needing work stood about 200 feet from the road, up a small incline. The wind was still going hard, not quite dangerous, but bad enough to make you think twice. We got our harnesses and gear and craned up to start assessing the damage. From the lift, I could see over the tops of the trees. That's when I noticed something weird. There was a flicker of light in the distance, like the soft orange glow of a campfire. Maybe a few hundred yards off, not too far. I was just about to ignore it when I heard something. A woman yelling, clear as day. Someone help me, please. I froze. I looked down at the guys and shouted, did you hear that? They yelled back up. Yeah, they did. One guy even looked visibly shaken. I craned down fast, unhooked, and we all stood there listening. The wind was still blowing, but the yelling continued. Same phrase over and over. Please help me. It was coming from the same direction as the glow. One of the guys pointed out that it looked like the light was maybe just down the slope near where our trucks were pointed. So we piled into the smaller 4x4 work truck and started heading that way. We drove slow, eyes peeled. After about 100 yards or so, the light vanished. Gone, just like that. But then we heard something else, moaning. Not yelling now, but but deep, guttural groans. It sounded wrong, almost like old people dying, wet, painful, choked. Two distinct voices. We all stopped. The moaning was coming from off the road, maybe 30 yards to our right, deeper into the trees. None of us said anything for a second, and then the site supervisor radioed the local police. He gave them a rough location and asked them to send someone out. They told us if we felt safe, we could take a look until they got there. I don't know what made me say yes. Maybe it was the leftover bullshit from Iraq. Maybe it was adrenaline. But I grabbed a pickaxe from the bed of the truck, and two of the other guys grabbed some lengths of conduit, and we walked toward the noise with our headlamps on. The moaning didn't stop. It got louder. We pushed through the trees slow, watching the shadows move with every step. Eventually, we came to a clearing. Empty. Dead silent now. The kind of silence that makes your stomach sink. We walked the edge of the clearing, looked for anything. Bags, a tent, a person, anything. But there was nothing. Just a patch of dead grass and a weird acrid smell, like burnt rubber or something long decayed. We turned back. Right as we got back to the truck, it started again. The woman's voice. Please, please help me. It was louder this time, like she was right behind the trees. One of the guys, Jesse, shouted back, "Where are you?" No response. And then she screamed. I mean, really screamed. Pure agony. Then, nothing. Silence. We ran back toward the sound, but this time two cop SUVs pulled up at the same moment, lights flashing but sirens off. Two officers jumped out and followed us as we bolted toward the tree line again. We all stopped in the same clearing. Still nothing. One of the cops looked at me and said, "This where you heard it?" I nodded. He looked around like he was already writing us off, but he still helped us sweep the area. No footprints, no signs of a fire, no sign anyone had ever been there. Eventually, we gave up. We all headed back to the tower to finish the work. The cops stuck around, parked next to each other a little up the road, talking with their windows down. We got the line fixed in about an hour and started packing up. I was strapping a toolbox when one of the officers came over. He was older, had that tired look some cops get after too many years on the job. He asked, "You boys know what happened just west of here?" We shook our heads. He said there'd been a small aircraft crash in that area, decades ago, probably late 70s. A little private plane went down after hitting a low ridge. The wreck caught fire. By the time responders got there, the plane was fully engulfed. Three people burned alive. Two of them had apparently crawled out of the wreckage but didn't make it far. One body was found halfway under a log, like they'd tried to drag themselves to shelter. The other was found slumped over a rock with their arms outstretched. The third was fused inside the wreck. He paused and said, "I've been out here a lot. Never seen or heard anything myself. But I believe you heard something." That was all he said. We didn't even finish packing before we started the engines. We left half the coffee thermoses and one guy's jacket behind. I didn't care. None of us said a word on the way back to the yard. The next day, I called dispatch and told them I wasn't taking any more night calls in that region. Whatever we heard, I can't explain it. I didn't see anything. I didn't smell a fire. But I heard it. We all did. The voice wasn't panicked like a living person. It was too stuck, like it was trapped on a loop. That night didn't scare me in the way war does. This was different. This felt like we were somewhere we weren't supposed to be, somewhere still echoing with things long dead. I never went back. Story 7. I live in Leeds, born and raised, and I've always loved getting out of the city when I can. My boyfriend Will and I took a road trip around Scotland last summer. Nothing fancy, just our little Honda CRV, some camp gear, and a route sketched out with a marker on a tourist map we picked up in Fort William. We weren't doing anything hardcore. We just wanted to sleep under the stars, cook our meals outside, and maybe pretend for a bit that we didn't have work and bills waiting at home. We mostly stayed in laybys, beach car parks, forest pull-ins, places you're technically not supposed to sleep overnight, but people do it anyway. Most nights we weren't alone. Other camper vans, solo travelers, and sleeping bags on the gravel. You end up feeling this quiet sort of safety from the presence of strangers, like a temporary little community. Even if you don't speak, you know someone's around if anything goes wrong. There was this one bay, no idea what it was called, somewhere up past Ullapool, I think. You come down this winding road lined with scrub and heather, and then suddenly the land just opens up into this stunning view of the sea. There's a wide gravel patch right by the cliff edge where people park. We got there just as the sun was setting, and it was perfect. Cold, clear air, sea breeze. Maybe 5 or 6 other vans parked up when we arrived. Will made pasta on the camp stove, and we fell asleep with the back hatch open, listening to the tide coming in. The next day we drove inland a bit, did some hiking, and then agreed to come back to that same spot for the night. We liked it that much. But when we rolled in just after 9 p.m., the place was completely empty. Not a single car, no vans, nothing. It didn't feel right. Will even said it, kind of weird, isn't it? And it was, like we'd shown up to a party that had already ended without us knowing. But we figured, hey, maybe it's midweek, maybe people moved on. It's not like it was an official campsite. So we parked in the same spot as before and started setting up. Will pulled out the stove and started chopping up some onions. I grabbed the bin bag from the back seat and told him I'd chuck it in the bins. They were about 30 meters up the gravel path near a little patch of brush at the base of the cliffs. I walked over without thinking much of it. It was just getting dark. One of those dusks where the sky holds on to the light for a bit too long, making everything a little gray-blue and weirdly quiet. I got to the bins, popped the lid, tossed the bag in. That's when I heard it. A hissing, not sharp, like a snake. It was deeper, wet sounding, like a heavy exhale, but gurgled. It was coming from up on the cliffs above me, just behind the thick line of bushes. I stood there for a second, trying to convince myself it was wind. Then it stopped, and then started again. Only this time it wasn't above me, it was on the slope. Coming down, fast. There was no visible path on those cliffs, but I swear to you, the sound was getting closer like something was crashing through the underbrush, hissing with every movement. I spun around with my torch, just one of those little LED keyring ones, and pointed it everywhere. Nothing. But the sound was real, louder now, and it was approaching. I didn't even think. I ran, full sprint back to the car. I stumbled on the gravel, nearly face-planted, but I made it to Will, who was stirring the pasta like nothing was happening. I was breathless. "Something's up there," I said, trying to catch my breath. "In the cliffs. It's coming down, like hissing." He gave me this look, kind of skeptical, kind of confused, but then paused, spoon halfway to his mouth, and I saw it in his eyes. He'd heard it. "Get in the car," he said. No hesitation, just flat like that. "Now." I jumped in the passenger seat. Will didn't even bother packing the stove. Just threw the food out, slammed the boot shut, and got in. He turned the key, and just as the engine started, I saw lights coming down the lane. Headlights. A white van, looked like police. Not marked up like one, but had that same boxy look. It rolled down into the bay, slowed near us, then circled the edge like it was checking something. We both stared at it. It didn't stop. Didn't even roll a window down. Just turned and left. We didn't speak. Will reversed, hard, turned, and we drove straight out of that bay. 10 minutes later, we were parked outside a petrol station with the interior light on, both of us just staring ahead like we couldn't figure out what had just happened. Eventually, I asked, "You heard it too, didn't you?" He didn't answer right away, and then he said, "It was like breathing." I nodded. He went on, barely above a whisper. "It was behind you. I saw you stop at the bins, heard it above the cliffs, but then it moved, down, like it was crawling, big, heavy." I felt sick. Neither of us slept that night. We ended up driving all the way to Inverness and booking a Premier Inn at 2 a.m., just so we could lock a door behind us. I still don't know what it was, an animal maybe, but there were no sounds like footsteps. No breaking twigs, just that horrible wet hissing, and the feeling that something we weren't meant to see, had noticed us. We never went back to that bay. We never even tried to figure out where it was. Story 8. I've never been the outdoorsy type. I don't hike, I don't camp, and I don't have stories about getting lost in the middle of nowhere. But I live in upstate New York, right on the edge of a small town that most people would call boring. My house sits just a few dozen feet from a stretch of woods that goes on for miles. It's not a national park or anything like that. It's just dense trees, broken down stone fences, and trails that nobody's really supposed to use. The kind of place teenagers sneak into to smoke or screw around at night. I'm not going to act like I had some great reason to be scared of the woods before this. I've walked the edge of them during the day. Never seen anything weird. No weird people. No strange animals. Just trees. This happened last October. I live alone. No roommates. No pets. It was a Thursday night. I remember because I had a Zoom meeting the next morning and I went to bed early, around 10. I woke up at 3:12 a.m. I know the exact time because I looked at my phone. I wasn't startled awake or anything. No nightmare. No sound. I just opened my eyes like I'd been nudged. You know when something wakes you up but your brain hasn't caught up to it yet? I lay there for a few seconds, still groggy, trying to figure out why I was even awake. That's when I heard it, a laugh. Not close, but not far. Definitely outside, somewhere in the woods. It wasn't like someone chuckling at a joke or a group of people partying. It was a single person. And it didn't sound drunk or playful. It sounded wrong. It sounded off. The best way I can describe it is, it was like a cartoon character's laugh, but slowed down. Not edited or distorted. Just weirdly human, but exaggerated. Like a smoker's version of Krusty the Clown. Scratchy and too loud for the distance it came from. Ha, ha, ha. Three of them, spaced out like someone was making sure you heard them. I sat up, not quickly. I was trying not to move at all at first, like if I stayed still, it wouldn't keep going. But it did. Two more laughs, same pattern, same pitch. They echoed just slightly. That's when I got up and went to the window. I didn't turn on a light. I just lifted the corner of my blind with two fingers and looked out. My window faces the backyard, which slopes down into the woods. There's a little fence, just decorative, waist high, and then maybe 20 feet of grass before the tree line starts. Everything looked normal, dark, silent. I stood there for maybe a full minute, just listening. Then it laughed again, closer, same laugh. But now it sounded like it was just inside the tree line, like 10 steps in, and louder. Not like it was yelling, but like it was aiming the sound toward me. I whispered to myself, "What the fuck?" Then I did something really stupid. I whispered out loud, almost without thinking, "Hello?" I don't know why I did that. Just instinct, maybe. And then, right after I said it, something answered. Same voice. But this time, not a laugh. It said in a slow, garbled croak, "Hello!" I backed away from the window like it slapped me. I stepped on a shoe or something and stumbled. And the noise must have echoed because the thing in the woods started laughing again. But it wasn't repeating the same laugh anymore. It sounded like it was mocking me, copying how I tripped, giggling faster, almost maniacally now. I didn't want to look out again. My legs felt like they were full of sand, but I moved to the other side of the room, behind the curtain. I pulled it open just a crack. Nothing. No movement, no figure, no flashlight, no glowing eyes, nothing. But the laugh was closer. I swear to God it was just at the fence now. I couldn't see it, but I could hear it, and it sounded like it was just behind that little wooden fence, crouched or standing still, just waiting. I grabbed my phone and called 911. I didn't care if it was someone messing around. I didn't care if they thought I was crazy. The dispatcher picked up and I started whispering that there was someone outside my house. I told her I thought they were in the woods, maybe on my property. While I was whispering, the laugh stopped. Gone. Just silence, no movement, not even wind. I told the dispatcher, "I think they heard me." And then it knocked, not on the door, on the goddamn window. Right next to me. Just three slow knocks. Not hard, but deliberate. I dropped the phone. Literally dropped it and froze. I didn't scream. I couldn't. My throat locked up. I didn't want to move. Didn't want to breathe. The curtain was still slightly open, but I didn't look. I didn't want to see. I backed out of the room. I didn't even turn around. Just shuffled backward until I hit the hallway. I picked up the phone and whispered that it was at my window. The dispatcher told me officers were on the way and to stay on the line. I waited in the hallway, curled against the wall. I kept the phone to my ear but didn't say anything. Neither did she. The laugh didn't come back. The cops showed up in maybe 8 minutes. Two of them. One came inside while the other checked outside with a flashlight. They found nothing. No footprints. No damage. No signs of anyone even being there. They were nice about it. Didn't make me feel stupid. One of them even said he believed me. That sometimes people get bold and come up close to homes just to mess with people. But he looked uncomfortable. I could tell he didn't know what to make of it. I didn't sleep the rest of the night. I sat in the living room with every light on until sunrise. It hasn't happened since. I don't look out that window anymore. Not at night. And I never say hello to the woods. Story 9. I grew up in the southern Missouri, just outside of West Plains. Rural as hell. Mostly gravel roads, thick woods, and folks who like to be left alone. That part of the state has this weird energy to it sometimes. Hard to explain if you've never lived there. I've spent most of my life outdoors. Fishing, hunting, camping, all that. But this one night, man, I don't know. It's been a few years, and I still can't make sense of it. So this one Friday, my buddy Shane and I decided we'd head out to this old gravel pull-off way out past County Road 224. Locals just call it the Circle. It's literally a big dirt loop surrounded by woods with no houses for miles. People go there to shoot, drink, whatever. We used to go out there as teenagers and mess around, but this time we had this dumb idea to camp out in the bed of Shane's truck. Nothing fancy, just a mattress, some blankets, our guitars, and a cooler full of beer. We weren't expecting anything weird, just some tunes, cold drinks, and maybe catch the sunrise. We got out there around 7 p.m. It was late summer, hot and muggy. The bugs were bad, but we didn't care. We parked the truck right in the middle of the clearing, tailgate down, and started setting up. By dark, we had a little lantern going and were halfway through the cooler. Music, jokes, a few bad attempts at playing Nirvana. It was a good time. Then around 10:30, maybe 11, we both noticed something at the same time. That's important. It wasn't just me. I strummed a chord and stopped because I smelled something wrong, like metal, sharp, blood. I wrinkled my nose and looked over at Shane, and before I even said anything, he was already turning his head side to side, sniffing the air. "You smell that?" I asked. He just nodded slowly. "Smells like..." He didn't finish. He just stood up in the bed of the truck and started looking out toward the woods. I got this crawling feeling across my skin. You know when your body knows something your brain doesn't? Like it's picking up on something it can't quite explain yet? That's how it felt. The air was dead still. No wind, no crickets. Just this thick silence and that awful coppery stink. Then Shane said, "I feel like we're being watched." The way he said it gave me chills, because I felt it too, like eyes were on us from every direction. But we couldn't see anything past the tree line. It was just pitch black out there. I grabbed the flashlight from the cab and flicked it on, pointed it at the woods. Nothing. No movement. No reflection from animal eyes. Just trees. I moved the beam slowly around the circle, and then, no lie, something moved. Just at the edge of the light. It was quick, like a shadow darting behind a tree. "You saw that, right?" I asked. Shane didn't even answer. He jumped down from the bed and grabbed the axe we always kept in the back of the truck. That's when I started to get scared for real. Shane isn't the type to scare easy. He grew up hunting hogs with a knife. If he was shook, something was seriously off. We didn't say anything else. Just stood there for a second, listening. Then the smell got worse, stronger, almost unbearable. It was like whatever it was had gotten closer, but we couldn't see a damn thing. Then the noise started. It was this low moaning sound, like someone in pain. Not loud, just off. It echoed weird, like it was coming from all around us, not one direction. It wasn't an animal. I've heard dying deer, coyotes, even bobcats. This wasn't that. It was slower, human-like, but not right. I remember whispering, "We need to go. Right now." Shane didn't argue. We both scrambled to throw the blankets and guitars in the truck bed. We weren't careful. We didn't care. I jumped into the passenger seat while Shane ran around and got behind the wheel. Right as he turned the key, the truck's headlights lit up the woods in front of us, and I swear to God, there was something standing between the trees. I only saw it for maybe half a second, but it was tall, human-sized, pale, just barely visible behind the brush. It didn't move. It just stood there. "Go!" I screamed. Shane didn't hesitate. He floored it. Gravel shot out behind us as we tore down that old road like our lives depended on it. Neither of us said a word for the entire 10-minute drive back to town. When we finally pulled into his driveway, we just sat there in silence, breathing heavy. Eventually, he asked, "What the hell was that?" I didn't answer because I didn't know. I still don't. We went back a few days later in the daylight, just to see if we could find any tracks or maybe a dead animal that would explain the smell. Nothing. No signs of anything unusual. The woods looked normal, like it had all been in our heads. But I know what I saw, what I felt. People always want a neat ending to these stories, some kind of explanation or twist. But real life doesn't always give you that. Sometimes weird stuff happens, and you just have to live with it. I've been out in those woods 100 times before and since, but I've never gone back to the circle at night. Not once. And I never will. Story 10. I'm Josh, 31, and I live out of my van most of the year. I'm based out of Newcastle, New South Wales, but I chase work and surf down the coast when I can. I've slept in the back of my van in so many random places, beaches, state forests, truck stops, but this was the first time I've genuinely feared for my life. Or maybe not my life exactly, but something more basic, like my place in reality. This happened about a year ago, inland from a town called Gloucester. It's a bit remote, but nothing crazy. Just one of those blink-and-you-miss-it towns with one servo, a pub, and a couple old blokes always parked on the same bench like statues. I'd finished a landscaping job nearby and had another one lined up for the following week, so I figured I'd kill time by camping at this semi-off-grid site about 20 minutes outside of town. It was technically free, but they asked you to call this caretaker guy to let him know if you were staying overnight. When I called, he told me no one else was booked for that night, and since it was just me, I could use the day shelter, a kind of big open-air shed with picnic tables and a communal kitchen, for sleeping instead of setting up my tent. I was tired and it was already pitch black out, so I just rolled my sleeping bag out in the corner near the plug points and made a cup of tea. By maybe 10 p.m., I was already half asleep, dead quiet out there. You know the kind of quiet that starts buzzing in your ears because there's literally no sound at all? That kind. No wind, no crickets, not even the occasional rustle in the trees. Just still. Around midnight, I realized I'd left my phone charger in the van. It wasn't a big walk, maybe 30 meters away, but I hesitated. I didn't have a torch, just the light spilling from the old fluorescence overhead. Still, I told myself I was being soft and went over to the big sliding door. It was one of those heavy ones, corrugated metal, old school. When you open it, it doesn't glide, it grinds, loud as hell. I pulled it halfway open, and the second I did, I stopped, just froze. There's this weird thing about light when you're out in the bush. The light from the shed went out maybe 10 meters, and then there was this 1 meter wide gradient, like a no man's land, where the light didn't reach, but the darkness hadn't fully taken over either. It was this sickly gray blur before it faded to complete black. And in that blur, I saw them. 4 legs, just legs, long, pale white, and way too thin. They looked like dog legs, backward joints, hock joints, but too long. Human length, if that makes sense. But there was nothing above them. No body, no head. Just 4 white legs standing there like they were growing straight out of the darkness. They didn't move at first, just stood perfectly still in that narrow corridor of dimness. Then they began walking, parallel to the shed, keeping inside that 1 meter wide gray zone, never stepping into the full light, never vanishing into the darkness either. just pacing, like it knew exactly where my eyes were and exactly what I could see. I couldn't breathe. I mean that literally. I was holding my breath, and I didn't even realize it until I felt my chest start to burn, and the sound, or the lack of it. Even as the thing moved, there was no sound. Not the crunch of leaves, not a twig snap, not even a shuffle. I stood there with the door half open, completely exposed, and just watched as it passed by slowly. The legs didn't even look like they were working hard. They just glided. And then, before I could blink, they slipped into the full black, like someone cut them out of the world. I slammed the door shut so hard it echoed into the forest. I didn't go to my van. I didn't get the charger. I didn't even move from that spot for like 10 minutes. I just leaned against the door, staring at the concrete, and waited for something else to happen. But nothing did. Still no sound outside. No wind. Not even a bug. Like the bush was holding its breath. Eventually, I dragged the picnic table over and shoved it up against the door, then stacked chairs on top of it. There was this tiny office room off the side of the shelter. I'd seen it earlier, used for storage mostly. And I locked myself in there for the rest of the night. Couldn't sleep. Couldn't sit still. I sat upright in the corner with my phone flashlight on until the battery died. I left before sunrise. Didn't pack up properly, just threw everything into the van and floored it. Never even called the caretaker back. I've looked into it since. Everything from ghost stories to Aboriginal lore to cryptid forums, but nothing really matches. Some people have thrown out skinwalker theories or interdimensional stuff, but those are just words. No one's got a good explanation. And here's the part that really gets me. The thing, whatever it was, knew how to be seen. It chose to stay in that exact strip of semi-light where the human eye can just barely make out shape and form. Like it knew what would terrify me most wasn't seeing it fully or not seeing it at all, but seeing just enough. I haven't been back there since. Haven't even driven through Gloucester. Honestly, I don't think I saw an animal. I don't think I saw a ghost. I think I saw something pretending to be seen. Something that wasn't supposed to be real, but knew how to act just real enough.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.